Hey there, my name's Mark McCartney and welcome to the What is a Good Life podcast. Over the last 3 years, I've interviewed over 200 people around this question, not to prescribe you with a universal answer, but to help you to find and define your own answer to this question. I'm hoping that in sharing the guests' musings, explorations, curiosities and inquiries that it helps prompt your own inquiry into this question. Well, I'm also trying to share with you what I perceive to be more genuine expressions of the human experience and indeed more meaningful conversations. Which brings us to this week and the 65th episode of the What is a Good Life podcast. I'm delighted to introduce George and Linda Pransky as our guests. In 1976, George and Linda stumbled upon a new way of helping people that was radically different from the traditional counselling methods that they'd been using in their work. The new principles they were learning had a huge impact on their personal lives, their relationship, and the way they worked with their clients. Through teaching these principles to their clients, they became pioneers in a new field of psychology, both serving as partners of Pransky and Associates and on the executive committee of the Three Principles Global Community. Dr. George Pransky is also the author of The Relationship Handbook, Life is a Metaphor, and The Secret to Mental Health, as well as over 50 audio recordings. In this episode, George and Linda share their understanding of how people really change, that being through realizations rather than intellect and willpower. We discuss the importance of gratitude, patience, quiet, accountability, and faith in further realizations occurring. We also explore how our thinking is often broken and how they both have moved from reacting to life to living life. Look, this whole conversation I find incredibly enlightening. George and Linda have so much wisdom to share, and in highlighting where our problems reside and sharing several anecdotes and insights, the whole conversation serves as an invitation to be drawn into life rather than reacting to it. So if you take half as much from this conversation as I did, you're going to take a lot from it. And if you enjoy this episode, please continue to like, share and subscribe. And if you're on the podcasting platforms, to please continue to leave your lovely reviews and indeed share it with anyone else who you think might enjoy it, as it greatly helps me and I greatly appreciate it at this stage of my podcasting journey. And if you'd like to check out any of the Pransky's books, please check out the links below, as well as links with regards to contacting me if it's to inquire about one-on-one coaching or indeed executive team coaching. And a reminder again to check out my What is a Good Life newsletter at www.whatisagood.life if you'd like to get a further sense of my reflections on the conversations that you're listening to. So having said all that, without further ado, the 65th episode of the What is a Good Life podcast. George and Linda, thank you very much for joining me today on the What is a Good Life podcast. Having been made aware of your work earlier this year, I've been really looking forward to having this conversation with you both.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So as I tend to kick these off, as I've been telling you, it's with the question of, is there a question you're trying to answer as you move through life?
So, do you have a question that you're trying to answer?
No.
I don't either. I used to have a question, and that question was, when I was very young, my question was, for a number of years, how people change. But then I got that answered, and after that, I didn't have any more questions about on my mind about life. Mm. So sometimes I had the question, what do I want for dinner? But
yeah.
But no, like very pressing, very big philosophical questions.
Yeah.
No.
And for you, Linda, what realization came around how do people change?
Oh, they change through realization.
Oh.
You know, you don't change through willpower. You realize something. And when you realize something, your beliefs change or your understanding about life changes in such a way that you change.
And how would you characterize that sense of realization? You know, so let's just say people might think, okay, if I hear something or if somebody tells me something or if I read something, how would you kind of distill the quality of realization, if you get me?
Well, it comes with a feeling of your spirits going up and the experience of, oh my goodness, that's true. It's like this kind of explosion where you know, and a good example is where people will, you know, people who smoke will say, oh, I know I need to stop smoking. I know I need to. And then all of a sudden they'll go,
Oh my God, I really do.
I really do need to stop smoking.
You really do need to.
And then they stop smoking.
Yeah.
Once they have that realization of I really do need to stop. Yeah.
So at first it's just an intellectual thing.
Yeah.
And then it's a thing of the heart.
Or a thing of or organic. It's very, like your whole being understands.
Right.
The meaning of something. And that's how people change. Like my first, the realization that I had, the first time I had a realization that I knew was a realization was around moods. Because I really struggled with moods. And then I realized that they weren't a big deal. But I had made them a big deal. And the realization that they were no big deal, they were normal, everybody had moods, I didn't have to be afraid of them. It's like my whole experience of moods changed such that they almost, I knew I had them, but they were background rather than foreground in my experience.
I guess you could say they were a game changer.
Yeah, it was a game changer in terms of moods.
Right.
Where I would, before my realization, I would literally try, you can't do this, it's impossible.
Yeah.
But I would try to run from my experience of a mood. My mood would, I'd feel my mood dropping and I'd try to literally run from it. But, and then I realized that it was no big deal if your mood dropped. It was just a temporary experience, psychological experience.
Isn't that like just so liberating, that sense of, okay, here's this thing that I'm trying to run from all my life that we're almost perpetually being told that we can instantly change if we want it enough, or if we follow a certain line or process. And then it's almost just in the accepting of its presence, or that some degree of liberation comes.
Well, from realization is something that everybody has and does, but it's not on their time frame. It's not like you can't like, oh, I'm going to have a realization now. It's like it just happens to people spontaneously and usually when they least expect it.
Well, mostly what happens with people is they use it, they either use their willpower with realizations, or they either use their willpower or they use something deeper than willpower.
Yeah. Well, something deeper is the realization.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people are wired up to have realizations. I mean, it's just part of being human is to have realizations, but instead of looking to realizations, to the possibility of realization, people just get all caught up in their intellect trying to fix themselves or change themselves, and they get into a big snarl trying to work it out from the intellect. And change doesn't happen from the intellect. It happens from a deeper aspect of people's minds.
Just in that then, like when... Is there something to... If it's not efforting towards something, right? As then the process, not even a process end, but there's just the fact that these revelations or realizations are almost they're just part of the human experience. And you're saying that intellect can often get us caught up in ideas of how we're going to create these realizations.
Mm-hmm.
What stops us getting in our way? Like what allows us not to interfere too much with what sounds like a very natural process?
I think that when people enjoy their life, and I think when people are grateful for what they have instead of looking at what they don't have. So as people go about enjoying their life and being grateful, I think that's the platform for insight.
Well said.
And so with that sense then of just enjoyment and gratitude, like are we assuming that like almost like our base case then is almost like a is like there's a well-being setting or something to the the extent that we're experiencing life, that if we, this kind of gratitude or the awareness of that enjoyment is that that's something natural or intuitive to us if we don't get in the way?
Well, I think, well, let's see, how do I answer that? I think that it's kind, we, people have everything wired up wrong, but they, it doesn't look wrong. It's like the people who get, the more positive feeling, the more enjoyment, the more gratitude, the more understanding and realization they get. But people think that, well, if I really dig into my problems and I really think about them and I get really serious about them and I get really intense about them, then I'm going to get an answer. But, and you would think that would be the way, and people do think that that's the way, but it's the opposite, which is kind of confounding to people's minds.
In a way, the more you free your mind,
the more you free your mind, yeah.
The better it does.
The better off you are.
Yeah.
The more you have freedom of more space or more freedom in your mind.
Yeah.
Would be a platform for insight. But when people want an answer where they feel like something's wrong or they feel like they need to fix something, they attack it with their desire, their want, their need, their intellect, their insecurity, their... And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It works the opposite.
Because even when you say it though, right? Like it seems to just make such natural sense. You know, like to have such opposition to something that, you know, let's say if we go back to your realization, even around moods, if we seem to have such an opposition or a will for something in us to be different, it seems like that would be a difficult way to cultivate more ease or gratitude in our life if we're so clear that something has to change and it has to change soon as well.
Mm-hmm. That gets in the way. This has to change. You know, the attachment to the change gets in the way of the change. The desire for the change gets in the way of the change. Being down about the fact that you haven't changed gets in the way of the change. Yeah. So it's almost like in order to change, you have to accept the change. I mean, you have to accept how you are in order to change, would be another way of saying it. Accepting how you are and forgetting about yourself allows you to change.
Yeah.
Is that funny?
Yeah.
It's the opposite of what people think.
For you then, George, when you said that you don't have a question as you're moving through life, has that been that there's something that has been satisfied, or has that just never been the way that you've kind of looked or perceived life?
Let me take my time with answering this. I think that people can have an understanding of life that, an understanding of life that fills the void that they feel.
Mm. Because when you have a question, you have a void, don't you?
Yeah.
And when you have an understanding. But you know, one thing I've noticed about you, George, in your life, because I think this answers the question, you've always had a lot of faith.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not talking about religious faith. I'm not, because people would, usually when they say faith, it means religious faith. It's just faith in life.
And the other thing that I have going for me, now that you mention it, is comfortable in the unknown, not knowing. So that really helps me because I'm not in a hurry to find answers.
Yeah.
So I can get reflective, and when I get reflective, the answers come to mind. And that's what really has helped me to have a nice life.
Yeah, the idea of not being in a hurry to find answers, like that, just it almost seems like you're almost taking yourself off the clock or something. Like it feels right. Like there's a release of pressure that I'd say a lot of people feel in feeling almost the opposite of that.
Well, that's why I Linda would call it faith. So faith allows people for answers to come to mind in their own sweet time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what faith does to people.
That's gorgeous. I've never heard of faith put that way. That it's the trust that the answer will emerge. Really,
mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I guess what a difference that is in life, right? If the
it's an absolute game changer, because it allows you to be patient, because faith is really another form of patience. So when you feel you're up against it in life, if you understand that the only thing that's wrong is you've lost your faith, that's all you need to do is regain your faith.
I think you could also use the word, interchangeably, you could use the word trust. It's like you trust in life that life will help you, that you will get the help you need, or
yeah,
the answers you need, or whatever you need, that'll come to you. Yeah.
It reminds me of a quote that's attributed to Einstein anyway, where it says one of the most fundamental decisions a human being will have is whether they view the universe as a hostile place or a friendly place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's funny, like words like faith and trust, just that you added there as well, Linda, we use those words so freely, like, but they take on a very different, like the way you're describing it there is, it's almost like at this, almost like this deeper level of, it's not an intellectual thing once again, or I trust you, or I believe, it's like, I feel this in my bones, in my heart, I feel this.
Right.
Well, that would be an example of talking about a realization, because you realize the place of trust and you realize the function or the place of faith. It's a realization. And then the realization allows you to make it real for yourself. Because there are plenty of people who say they have faith, but it's not a realization, it's a belief. And but it doesn't give them the comfort or the security that they're looking for. But when faith comes as a realization, it gives you the security that you're looking for. Or it fills the void, as that was beautifully put, the way George said it, fills the void. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to that sense of it's made me reflect on the first question that I ask for this podcast all the time, to be honest. But this sense of a question and an absence of question kind of almost being in tandem with an absence of a void to fill. Mm-hmm. At that point, is that a sense of just that life is being experienced and engaged with? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. a bit mm-hmm. like you're saying, George, that you're not in a rush to go anywhere because there's a trust that it's emerging. Like it seems to make life far less of an intellectual engagement, shall we say?
Yes. That would be right, because our intellect is always struggling for answers, and that's not where answers where answers occur. Mm-hmm. They don't. The intellect is nothing but questions, but there's no answers there. The answers come from an understanding of life. And that's what helps human beings, is when you get a deeper understanding of life, that does something for people.
Which seems so counterintuitive to how life seems to be, I don't know, even picking up pace, it seems, even in a sense of information and transfer of information and people's sense of relationship, I think, even with time.
Right.
But this sense, once again, that it's, I'm sure people who are listening, they have the experience of trying to find answers to through life through their intellect, which often just seems to create more questions or more discomfort, maybe even perhaps.
So the experience would be where you would when you slow the intellect down, because the intellect can get a lot of momentum. Hmm. And so you start to slow the intellect down, and then time slows down, your life slows down, and then you feel better. You feel, you know, connected to life. You feel connected, you know, to the moment or to your life, whatever your life is in the moment. You feel connected and drawn into life. Rather than drawn into the intellect, you get drawn into life. And that's where satisfaction is,
right?
Is being drawn into life. There's really not a lot of satisfaction for most people in their intellect. I mean, for some people who love to think,
yeah,
there is. Yeah. But a lot of what we think about, there's no satisfaction in.
Could you elaborate on that really lovely expression, drawn into life, and how would you expand upon that?
When you think about it, you know, life is a feeling. There's a feelingfulness to life. There's a feelingfulness to being alive, right? And there's a feelingfulness to living.
You might say it's an awakeness.
Yeah, awakeness to the moment. And I don't like use, because that's so overdone. You know, you get in the moment or be present. It's so overdone, but there's a truth in it. There's a real truth in it. And that as you kind of fall out of the intellect, you just get locked into the feeling of life.
Right.
And the feeling of life is lovely.
Yeah.
People love. And the feeling of life is it's ordinary.
Right.
And it's the ordinariness of just, you know, having a meal or talking to your partner or to a friend or having a cat or taking a walk or working. Or, you know, like doing what you do, you know, it's like you get into what you do in the moment of what you do and talking with people. And there's just a nice feeling to it.
With that sense of this feeling of life, How does that mix in then with the opening sense you had of like, or one of your bigger realizations being, oh, my mood, I don't have to resist my mood. This is a normal part of life. Mm-hmm. So, because I think something that some people get confused at times is like, oh no, in order for me to be drawn into, not using the terms exactly as you've used them, but in order for me to feel drawn into life, it's usually in something where there's an absence of discomfort, in a very psychological or a mood sense. But I really love this, the way like being drawn into life and feeling life. You know, I think that also offers a potential for feeling whatever life is presently, whatever is being cultivated. How would you kind of tie in those things together?
Well, people, you know, they react to their experiences that they don't like. Like I reacted to my experience of mood, which I didn't like, so I would react to it. And my reaction was, you know, kind of blown out of proportion,
right.
Was dramatized. And so I would have a big unpleasant reaction. And that would be my life for however long, that reaction. Now, I would not see that as being drawn into life. I would not call that being drawn into life. I would call that reacting to my experience that I didn't like. So when people start to understand that they're going to react to some experiences in life, it's normal to have experiences that you react to. And everybody's different. You know, what your experience that you wouldn't react to, like say, for example, you reacted to when you saw a spider, you get all freaked out. And when I saw a spider, I'd go, oh, how cute, you know?
Right.
So people reactions to the same thing can be different, but it's our reactions to our experience that take us out of that feelingfulness. But that's okay, because that's what happened. It's human. And in my experience, the best thing that I can do is just get over my reactions as fast as I can, not hold on to them.
And here's what that looks like in real time. For George Peransky, what I struggle with is being hard.
What do you mean, sweetie?
I struggle with being harsh.
Oh, you mean you can get harsh sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And impatient. And I saw that as I in my 30s, I realized that about myself, that I can get impatient and harsh. And then I realized that if I was patient, that feeling would go away, and I'd be in a whole different feeling.
So you realize that when you would react to your experience of harshness,
right?
If you just got patient with that experience, it would go away. Yeah. Is that what you mean? Okay.
That was it, because that was the only problem was. I had an experience and I didn't like it. And that's the only thing that was happening. Mm-hmm. It was so simple.
Yeah. And see, what I would do is, instead of using the word patient, it's like when I get into an experience that I don't like, I get quiet with it.
Yeah.
I kind of get quiet. Like be with it and quietly kind of wait.
Well, I would say that about myself.
Yeah, but you just use a different term.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd say patient and I'd say quiet.
Yeah.
You know,
see, life is always going to be a full contact sport. So everybody is on their own about that. Mm-hmm. So in order to have a peaceful life, you have to have a lot of faith, and you have to
roll with the punches.
Roll with the punches, yeah. That's what I was trying to say.
It's, you know, it makes me think of, I think my my initial response always to getting angry was to get angry at myself for being angry.
Yeah.
And good luck with ever escaping that, I guess. For you, George, then, what was the lead in to becoming aware of this? You know, if it was an awareness or observation of impatience or a harshness that maybe came with that as well, to then realizing that, and then how did this quietness or this quiet begin to cultivate then for you?
Well, I had a realization about reactions, and I realized that all I was doing was reacting to life. I wasn't living life, I was reacting to life. And that was a huge change for me. I wouldn't have said that about myself prior to it happening. I said, "Oh my God, I'm there's nothing happening. I'm just reacting to life, the fact of living."
God, that's there's a number of things I think you both have kind of touched on with just I think it seems to be more quite a normalized or accepted way of either reacting to life, trying to think ourselves out of things,
right.
Impatience with what is, our moods with our moods. And when you say something just like that, that we are reacting to life rather than living life, I think that carries a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Linda was really right on when she talked about moods, because I always thought she was a very moody person, and then all of a sudden she changed, and she took responsibility for her moods, and that solved everything.
See, it's very, very simple, and yet, you know, it's an endless conversation with yourself, in that you, to the extent that you react to your experience, you get caught in it. And what happened simply is I stopped reacting to my moods, and then I no longer looked like a moody person, nor did I have the experience of being a moody person. Only because I stopped reacting to my moods.
And what she did, can I add this?
Oh, yeah.
What she did instead of reacting to moods is she got quiet.
Hmm. Or I just had them.
Yeah.
And so I just went through the experience with them quietly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't kicking and screaming with them.
Yeah.
You know. But like, for example, you know, I work with a lot of people that have anxiety. Well, they get the experience of anxiety and they just get all completely caught up in it because they think it's wrong, it's meaningful, and there's something wrong with them, and they don't like it, and they're embarrassed, they don't want to have it. they have so much thinking about their experience of anxiety that becomes, it just mushrooms.
Right.
And they become more anxious and they identify with it and then they become afraid of it and they hear the footsteps of it and it becomes a lifestyle of anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lifestyle.
A lifestyle of anxiety when it could be just a passing experience.
Right. That's what the choice is. Is it going to be a passing experience or is it going to become a lifestyle?
Yeah.
That's what human beings are up against.
Yeah.
Where are they going to go?
Yeah. And my moods were a lifestyle until they became a passing experience.
Yeah.
And how you know, you're saying you work with people with this experience of anxiety, Linda. How do you kind of invite people into notice this or become aware of this? You know, from the shifting of it becoming to for it not to become a lifestyle as such.
Well, one of the questions I ask, that's a great question. One of the questions I ask them is that why does it matter if you have an experience of anxiety? Why is it such a big deal? What's wrong? What's wrong with having an experience of anxiety?
Now, that question cuts to the heart of the issue.
So big deal. And then I tell them that it's not, the problem isn't the actual experience of anxiety. The problem is all the extraneous thinking they have around it and the meaning they make of it. And how much they think into it.
Yeah.
And how much fear they have around it.
Yeah.
So there's this little experience of anxiety that they don't like. Or maybe it's even a big experience in the moment. But then there's all that's just wrapped in all this extraneous thinking, layers and layers of thinking. And that's the problem, is the layers and layers of thinking and meaning that they put on it. What does it say about me? What if somebody sees me anxious? You know, all of this is just layers of thought that they put around the experience of anxiety. So it's like I just pull it all apart with them.
I like what George said there in terms of that first question you asked, Linda, almost cuts through it or gets to the heart of it. And I had a thought a few months back while walking my dog, when I was just like, what if the problem to a lot of our discomfort is having a problem with the initial problem or the initial discomfort?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That goes through your mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, George, you were mentioning earlier, like just of this idea of people losing their faith, just intrigued as to how Linda was even just mentioning there how she'd help people engage with this sense of anxiety. How have you guys brought people, or how would you guys even suggest that people reconnect with their sense of faith, or what would that kind of look like?
That's a good question. That sounds like a Linda Pransky question.
See, I think that people have to realize that they're a lot more powerful than they think.
Right.
Hmm.
And that they live in mental health. That's their basis of who they are, is mental well-being or mental health. And the only thing that breaks them, that gives them the illusion of being broken, is broken thinking.
Yeah.
People can get a lot of broken, very negative thinking, and they lose their well-being. But once they get rid of their broken thinking, they clear their minds, and they naturally reconnect with their own mental health and their own natural resiliency and their own personal power. And everybody has natural resiliency, natural innate mental health and personal power. And what happens is their intellect tricks them. They get bad habits of thinking that they believe in that makes them feel and think broken. And they got a clue into that. They got a clue into that they're their own worst enemy in that regard. Some of their thinking can be their own worst enemy.
You know, George, you had mentioned that when you observed a shift in Linda, that there was an accountability as well for what was occurring. Just with what you were saying there, Linda, how do you find people's reaction to even maybe, I don't want to say an accountability, that they can be their own worst and they can be their own worst enemy, but just even that this thinking, you know, because often we can have a perspective of the world that it's something from outside of me, it's something needs to change, a partner needs to change, a child's behavior needs to change. How do you find that people engage with this almost acknowledgement that it's, wow, this is my broken thinking right now?
Well, the truth of it is, it's not going to help anyone to blame or justify their experience. Blame their experience on the outside. It never helps to blame your experience. It never helps. Even if it looks true, it never helps. And it never helps to justify. What helps is to just to see what your experience, what your thinking is doing to you.
So really, all you're saying is that understanding is the answer.
Yeah, understanding what you're thinking, your perspective, what your belief or what your, the way you're looking at it, what it's doing to you.
And your understanding will naturally
clear it. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot of justification. Well, I wouldn't feel this way if, or I wouldn't feel this way because, you know, you did, if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't feel this way. Or I feel this way because, and it just holds your experience, this negative experience in place. Even if it's true, it doesn't matter.
Right.
What matters is that people want to feel better. Everybody wants to feel better.
But I think the observation of that, like, how do you feel almost in your self-righteous indignation, even when other people would say you are absolutely right and you're having this, you know, and so even if it held up in a court of law, you know, whatever it may be, people that are even good judges of character would say, yes, they were wrong. How does it feel in that moment when you're just, it's just getting more and more tightly wound up, I guess?
Well, it's nice to feel righteous indignation. And yes, everybody agrees with you and it feels great. And you can relish that for a bit, but it's not going to help you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can enjoy that, you know, self-righteousness for, you know, for a little bit. But then you got to get off of it and really take responsibility for your own experience and how to get out of it.
It's going to take a toll on you.
Yeah, it's going to take, if you stay in it.
Yeah, if you stay in it, it's going to take a toll on you.
Yeah. It's going to wear you out.
Yeah.
So it's like you just see how to find your way out of it, no matter who's right. And you really have to give up right and wrong. Stop looking at right and wrong, because that just puts you in this ping pong game. So you just have to be okay with, let's table right and wrong and just look and see how to make it all better.
That's I think that's a rather sizable thing you've just said there.
Well, the thing about human beings is they know the difference between a feeling, a good feeling, and a bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being knows the difference. If you
A child knows the difference.
Yeah, a child, everybody. And if you can know the difference, you always can head towards a good feeling.
A better feeling.
Yeah. It's built into us to feel good. And we just have to go back to it.
You know, when you say that, George, it makes me think of, irrespective of if people, whatever, the cultural, irrespective of what may be acceptable, I know how something made me feel. And I know just in the feeling, it doesn't matter if people say, oh, you did the right thing, or that was acceptable or not. I have a inbuilt sense within me that, oh, when I did that, that didn't feel right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think just mm-hmm. what you're saying there makes me think of that sense of, like, if we're living the felt experience, or if we're living our lives, if we're not just reacting and we're feeling the experience of our lives, to me, in ways, it doesn't really make a difference if somebody, what the external people are saying, whether they're validating me or disagreeing with me. I know what I felt. And I think that's it's an interesting perspective for sure. With regards to, you know, there's been so many different really important topics I think you guys or themes you guys have brought up, even the idea that it's not willpower that gets us to, right. you know, to a certain feeling of life. That's, we'll just get caught up in that more and more. It's not even the sense of escaping moods in life. It's, you know, even it could be a question of creating patience, slowing down, quiet, and to just right. feel whatever it may be. And acknowledging that, like, gratitude, once again, it's not forcing these things. It's a natural sense of gratitude that almost springs up in us that cultivates the, I don't want to say the conditions and make this sound too linear, but it's that sense that is going to be far more likely to bring us more peace in our lives than focusing on what we're frustrated with ourselves or our perceived weaknesses and trying to just fixate on those. Then even what you were touching on, George, with regards to, you know, freeing our minds and freeing ourselves of a question, and moving from a state of almost reacting to life to just fully living life. And then even just what you've said here as well, Linda, this lovely sentiment of just moving away from right or wrong when engaging with other people. Just really curious to hear the answers or perspectives on the question of what is a good life for you?
Well, what I want to just say is just being alive is a good life. Just living life is a good life. I mean, living life and meeting it and being resilient about it is a good life. You know, rising, you know, being reactive to things and then rising above it, you know, coming out of it. And just knowing that you can come out of it, you know, knowing that you can rise above your reactions and get into a nice feeling again and enjoy your life. That's a good life.
Yeah.
You know, not, because some people, you know, they get caught. They'll get caught in their reactions and they'll stay. You know, they'll just stay there. And then they'll come out and get caught in another reaction and stay there, and they just live from reaction to reaction, and that's no fun. Or they get caught in, you know, righteous indignation and they just won't leave it. You know, they just are angry at life and don't allow themselves to be resilient and pop out of it.
You know, I think that a good life is when people can follow their own inclinations. I think people have the inclinations that will lead them to a good life.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah.
Trusting themselves.
Yeah.
And listening to themselves and following their own inclinations.
And you can see that in young children. You know, children that are, say, 6 years old or younger, that's what they do. They don't even know it, but they just do it. That's their inclination.
That's a beautiful way to put it, and I think that as you were just alluding to as well, Linda, there, that really ties in with your sense, George, of faith again from earlier. That if I've often had a thought in the last few years that if I am just myself, the outcomes aren't so important. In that, what else could I be but be myself? And how could I regret ever being myself or following my own inclinations? As long as they are my own inclinations, I guess. But there's something very, I don't know, that feels profoundly true to that notion to me.
I like that.
Well, there's a great saying. I hope I did. You don't have to.
I think I know what you're going to say. You don't have to practice to be yourself.
Yeah.
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 Because what you are is a moment-to-moment expression or experience as well. Like whatever your idea of yourself is, you'll probably always be a few steps behind it. It's just the act of being it.
See, I think ultimately, we all want to be just ordinary. That's the key. If you want to be special, you're going to feel pressure. Mm-hmm. So ordinary, you don't need to feel any pressure. If you're willing to be ordinary, mm-hmm. then you're not going to feel pressure in life. And life is going to be good to you.
But ordinary people don't understand ordinary, because you could be, they have ideas about what that looks like, but it's not because like you could be an ordinary cardiovascular surgeon. So it's not like, well, I should be ordinary. I shouldn't, you know, get a higher education. They have a lot of thinking about what that looks like, but it's not that. It's the feeling of just, again, being yourself and just not trying to be more than what you are.
You know, in a world, I always find that it interesting how the things that we compare ourselves are often, you know, these external metrics that we're comparing our lot against somebody else's, where it's almost like the trick at times of this life is realizing that your own unique imprint or fingerprint of whatever it is you are, a constellation that you are, has never been before. Like you are one of 110 billion people that have existed on this planet, apparently. Like that's pretty special, even if you're just your ordinary self. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout the course of this conversation, you've both touched on, I think, so many fundamental themes for inviting people in to perhaps taking feeling life a little bit differently, experiencing life a little bit differently, experiencing a sense of time and faith a little bit differently as well. And I just want to thank you both so much for joining me here on the What is a Good Life podcast today. I've really enjoyed it. And a lot of what you've shared is going to give me a lot to contemplate for the coming weeks, I'm sure, as well.
I tell you, you're a very good
listener.
Really good listener. You pick up on a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's and your whole life has been listening. So that's no surprise.
Well, it's work. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's given me a very nice feeling to hear that.